This podcast is brought to you by sarahraven.com, which is home to everything you need for a truly beautiful and productive garden. You'll also find great and essential gardening kit and stylish, lovely things to have in your house to bring the outside indoors, all inspired by the garden and the house being tied together. There's also plenty of garden inspiration, how-to videos and specialist growing guides. So head over to sarahraven.com today to discover even more. Welcome to Grow, Cook, Eat, Arrange, the podcast of me, Sarah Raven, and different guests. And this week, I am so happy to have an old flower friend and colleague, Simon Lycett, joining me. And Simon's been here to teach at Putchill many times and loves it here. So, of course, I love him. But also, I love his flowers and his incredibly exuberant, flamboyant, joyful, glorious, colourful, sometimes kind of really pushing, not being too massively over tasteful, which I'm all for, and just sort of loving everything that flowers can bring. So he's a really top-notch florist, one of the best in the country at the moment, without doubt. Welcome, Simon. It's lovely to have you on the podcast.
Wow, well, thank you. That was the most gorgeous. I wish I'd recorded that myself. That was such a lovely introduction. Thank you. And I particularly like the fact that you and I have this bond over not being too tasteful most of the time when we're arranging our flowers.
Exactly. There's nothing worse than ghastly good taste, in my view.
No. I think, I mean, your garden is just, you know, my joyous times at Purchill are whenever I'm there, but I in particular remember standing amongst the dahlia test beds when we were together last, and you saying, oh, I don't know, is that one just a bit too out there? And then we were both like, of course it's not. It's fantastic. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. No, it's like, if it's what my mum would call vulgar, then we got to take it seriously and have a really good look at it, because that probably means that it's sort of really joyful and jolly and the sort of thing that will bring the spice to the party, basically.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I always say it's so bad it's good.
Yeah. Very good phrase. Very good phrase. So, Simon, tell me what you have been up to recently and what you're up to in the next few months.
Well, it's been, you know, it's that funny time of year. We're chatting in at the start of the year when things are starting to at last grow. I have to say, I'm very, very grateful that the rain has started to ease off and that the garden, suddenly things are growing in the garden, which is exciting. And in New Covent Garden Flower Market, the blossom, the magnolia branches, all of that gorgeousness that's coming in now, the scented narcissi from the Isles of Scilly, are just so inspiring. And a few weeks ago, there was virtually nothing in New Covent Garden Flower Market, certainly very little that was British grown. Mm. And now it's just bursting with colour and with fragrance. Mm. Almost every bucket is sunshine.
Oh, that's another lovely phrase. Absolutely. That's so good. And so you're still doing lots of private events and dinners and parties and with your team?
Yes, we just completed a golden wedding lunch in the Royal Opera House on Sunday, which was magnificent. Perfect time of year. So we had mimosa, ranunculi, narcissus, tulips, the tables, each of them was a burst of bright yellow and gold. It was just gorgeous. Aww. And in addition to all the fabulous parties, I've also been really lucky because I have just recently launched a BBC Maestro course, which is an online portal, so that now I can share my floral fabulousness over 20 lessons that people can download and learn how to create their own amazing arranging at home.
Oh, that's so good. So really practical build-up kind of sort of almost step-by-step guides.
It's exactly that. Wow. And we take you through the conditioning. You know yourself, if we grow these gorgeous flowers, they need to be conditioned well. Yeah. And then they last for ages in our vase indoors. So we go right the way through conditioning, creating a hand-tied arrangement, gorgeous garlands and wreaths, to spectacular displays for seasonal times of the year. There's an Easter bunny in there.
No.
And also gorgeous Christmas arrangements and magnificent urns for family occasions.
Gosh, and how do you, I'm definitely enrolling. So how do you enroll?
So if you go across to BBC Maestro, then you can subscribe either just to me, to my course, Decorating with Flowers, or to all their courses. And there's Gary Barlow, there's Marco Pierre White, there's Helena Bonham Carter. There's a huge gamut. I mean, great company, you know.
Yeah, very cool. That's very distinguished. Excellent. I mean, we're coming out on the beginning of May. And so I just wondered, tell me, what are your favourite garden flowers? And then, of course, cut flowers for exactly this moment. So the first sort of week of May, what are your tip-tops for cut flowers and garden flowers?
I have to have Lily of the Valley in there.
Oh,
of course,
yes.
They're not going to flower in my garden because the dog keeps weeing on them every time. I try and try, and I've now got them in a pot that's high, so he can't. I love Lily of the Valley. They just shout May to me. I also love all the fritillaries.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the Crown Imperials, that amazing, strange, foxy fragrance that lots of people hate it. I love it.
Yeah.
And they're phototropic, aren't they? They wend around in their vase. They do that thing. And they just evolve into a total joy for me.
Yeah, I love them. And that dewdrop of nectar right at the apex of every single part of their bells. Yeah, they're amazing. I totally agree. They're one of my absolute favourites. One of the things I would really love is for you to give us a sort of virtual tour of your little London garden, and then maybe also describe, because I know that you have a Scottish garden too, so I would love to just get a little bit of a picture for everybody of those two different gardens.
Well, London is teeny tiny, and I have one raised bed that's a metre deep, and it's probably about 3 metres long. And into that, thanks to you and attending your all-year-round veg courses, I now am able to go out and so proudly, you're lucky you don't get a photo of it every day as I do it. I'm so proud to be able to pick my husband and I a handful of salad every day. I've got kale, I've got watercress, lovely pea shoots, beetroot and chard, all the gorgeous leaves. At last, I'm able to grow sufficient flat-leaf parsley so I don't have to buy it from the greengrocer every week, which really makes me proud because, gosh, it's hard to get to germinate. Isn't it hard?
Yeah, it is. You have to soak it, but I'm sure I've taught you that.
You taught me to soak it in warm water to get there's an inhibitor on the seed for some reason?
Yeah, and then you dry it off because it's really difficult to sow wet seed. So dry it off for a few hours and then sow it. That normally works for me. Does it not work for you?
It does for me. It didn't until I learned from you. And now I am really thrilled and delighted by that. And then everything else I have in the garden, apart from one tree, is in pots. Every single thing is in a container. And lots of people say to me, oh, I can't really garden, I haven't got much space. Get some pots, get some containers. I think the big mistake most people make is they get little pots.
Yes.
And I think every pot needs to be the size of a dustbin.
Yeah, yeah. It's so true.
It has
so much easier to look after with the volume of compost.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
And you and Arthur taught me the benefits of a wash tub and of an assortment of big pots and of layering things up and just cramming them in and then feeding lots.
Yeah.
And I'm really lucky I have a watering system, which I installed. It's a teeny weeny time switch computer on the tap, which sounds so swanky and expensive. And it wasn't.
Yeah.
And then my father-in-law and I ran a capillary hose all around the garden, and each pot has a little, looks like a black cable. So in the winter, it's a little bit annoying. But the moment things start to grow, they all disappear. And it's the biggest joy in my life is the fact that I don't have to be out there a slave with the watering can.
Well, sorry, the dog's barking now. So the dog's not weeing on the Lily of the Valley, but it is barking. Anyway,
all through life, you know.
So back to your irrigation system. So how many minutes do you know that you put it on in the morning and the evening, or do you know what your regime is? Because it's one of the most common questions I get asked is, and we put ours on here for 5 minutes at the beginning, sort of in May and June, and then up to 10 minutes at 6 o'clock in the morning and then 6 o'clock in the evening. But what's your regime?
Well, I really, really struggle with slugs. I have a horrendous issue with slugs. And I was chatting to Arit Anderson last year, and she said, water in the middle of the night. And she said, you will find it will make a big difference and help with slugs.
Wow. Gosh, that's such a good tip.
So now it goes on at, I think, about two or three in the morning for normally about 15, 20 minutes. And then I'll do a wander around and see it's the wind that dries stuff out as much as anything, especially in pots, almost more than heat, I think.
Yeah.
So I'll go and have an assess and a wander around and poke my finger in. But if I'm away for any period of time, it normally does 10, 15 minutes in the morning, 10, 15 minutes in the evening to do a bit of box and cox to get everything covered.
Yeah. Gosh, that's such a good tip. I'm going to have to ask Garrett about that. So she's found that slugs aren't so active in the middle of the night. I thought they were, but that is a really good, that's a really good lesson. Great. Okay, so now we're, oh no, I also want to just hear about the Scottish garden.
So the Scottish garden is my husband's family have had a house on the west coast of Scotland on the Ardnamurchan Peninsula since the 1940s. It was a laundry to the local castle and it's been converted into the most rough and ready magical holiday home. And it has a lockside garden that really just has been cleared over the years. And it's not lived in all the time. And not that many people are into gardening when they're there on their holidays. So I've slightly taken it over and we have a local guy that will go in and mow the lawns and keep everything under control for us. And then it's filled with, I'm so selfish, we go up in the last week of July and August. So it's filled with anything and everything that will flower then and that is deer-proof and rabbit-proof.
Very good. Excellent, excellent.
So lots and lots of Monbretias, all the Crocosmias in every colour are just magnificent. I struggle to get hydrangeas to really be happy there.
That's okay. I mean, that's interesting. What about Lysimachia? You know, those loosestrifes, because they love it there, don't they?
They do, they do. And the Astilbes, they're very happy up there.
Yes.
And also I've done really well with things like mint and alchemilla that just self-seed themselves around and about. And that means I don't have to worry too much.
Yeah, great. How nice. Yeah, we have a garden up there too, as you know. And we don't garden at all. But the one thing that you can add, except you're not there to see them, is Narcissus, because deer, rabbits and hens don't eat Narcissus. They know they're poisonous to them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so we've got some Narcissus planted, which is almost literally the only cultivated thing apart from Monbretia. And they've been there. We've got records that they were planted in something like 1856, it looks like. There was a house that burnt down and they probably went in. You know, isn't that amazing? 170 years ago, whatever it is.
Incredible. And I assume very little intervention.
Well, none at all. No one's lifted and divided them. I suppose no one's mown apart from the sheep. And because they're toxic to sheep, they don't eat the leaves. So they've just thrived.
I quite like seeing what nature does in a garden on her own,
yeah,
don't you?
I do. I love it. Peonies love it. Noreens love it. And definitely Narcissus love it more than any other bulb. Oh, and Camassias, of course, they love neglect, don't they? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so on tips, because we all love a bit of take home. So we've got your tip about watering your pots at night against slugs. What about one or two really juicy floristry tips?
I would say if you're going to grow your own flowers, you can look around and see what it is that you love that's easy to grow, but don't go wild. Don't do tons of it because you don't need too many. A few stems of cosmos and a few cornflowers. I used to get so carried away sowing every packet and I'd have all of these things and then I wouldn't really know what to do with them and become slightly overwhelmed. But what I have done is I now have a few pots of shrubs and perennials that I can use for, so some of the salvias I have, and they're great because they give me a bit of foliage, they give me a bit of flower, a bit of texture and change. A head of hydrangea is a joy, easy in the garden and lovely to have, and always, always something scented. So sweet peas, mint, any of the herbs are lovely to cut and use in a flower arrangement. They're gorgeous.
Pelargoniums, one of the scented leaf pelargoniums are so nice too, aren't they?
All of them, absolutely adore them. And they're easy peasy lemon squeezy to grow from a cutting or virtually just a bits pulled off and shoved in a glass of water, aren't they, really?
Exactly, exactly. Great. Well, it's so lovely to chat. There's just one thing I wanted to ask you, because I know you and I and Shane Connolly have always had quite active debates when we were on the RHS Flower Committee about sustainability and about moving away from Oasis and all the sort of microplastic arguments. And I just wondered whether you could sort of describe to us the changes that you've seen in your business, particularly where you're doing incredible event floristry, which has been so dependent on tons and tons, you know, skip loads of Oasis, really. So what sort of changes have you seen in the last 5 years?
Well, I think one of the biggest changes is that we're able to have conversations with venues about the option of being able to use an alternative to floral foam. And one of the reasons we use as much floral foam as we have to in London, working in venues, is that if I'm in the historic Royal Palaces, I'm not allowed standing water in a vase because obviously it could cause some damage. However, we are now able to have conversations and say, your guest's going to be sitting at a table with some glasses of water on it and glasses of wine. So if we minimize the quantity of water, so that has been definitely one of the biggest steps. The other is that clients now ask about sustainability. They like to know the provenance of their flowers. And they're interested and excited. We're doing an event later in May when all of the flowers will have come from within 55 miles of my workroom.
Oh, wow. That's so great. That's amazing.
Isn't that brilliant?
Yeah, that is really brilliant. That is so brilliant.
And one of the lovely things about being able to buy from some of the smaller flower farmer growers is you're supporting small, independent businesses, nearly all of them run by amazing women who are just out there growing gorgeous things. And I just love being able to exploit their expertise and knowledge and have just lovely, lovely flowers to use.
Yeah, that's so right. So final thing. You're coming back, you're teaching here, I think it's September the 26th. No, yeah, it is September the 26th. So tell us, what will you be picking from then? I mean, I know there's dahlias, but maybe tell us one or two of your favourites and what other things that you're going to be enjoying picking from here and then showing people how to arrange.
I'm going to come and raid. I want all the dahlias. I really do want all the dahlias. But the thing that you're so clever with is you have so many different shapes, flowers. You have the lovely pom-poms with their sort of Fibonacci sequence petals. But you have all those really weird, jazzy ones, almost the single-petaled ones, which I know are great for the pollinators.
Yeah.
So I can't wait to get in amongst the test bed for those. And I really want some enormous, ridiculous cafe au lais just because they're so annoying but spectacular. They're like a sort of prima donna, aren't they? She never quite faces the way you want her to, but she just shows up when you need her.
Yeah, she does.
And then trails of Cobaea scandens.
Yes.
You grow it. And I cannot grow all those lovely, is it the Thunbergia?
Thunbergias, yes, yes, yes.
Those.
Yes.
I love those. None of those I can grow. I'm really hopeless. So I'm looking forward to raiding great trails of those and having them wending through my decorations.
Oh, good, good, good. And I hope we'll have lots of good hydrangeas for you too. We've got a hydrangea trial we're just planting right now, actually. And some of them at the moment look pretty hideous to me. But as we've started off with, quite often the hideous is the best.
Yes, definitely.
All right. Well, lovely to chat, Simon. And see you in September.
I can't wait. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks very much for listening to me and Simon Lycett, the wonderful flamboyant florist. And next week, I'm on my own, and I thought I would actually talk about the sort of edibles, the vegetables I would be lost without in the kitchen through the summer. So my absolute favourite six for sowing and planting now. Well, more planting than sowing, actually, to be honest. Anyway, join me then for planting and then lots of recipe ideas. See you then. You can find more information, photos, and advice sheets on all the plants and recipes we talk about on this podcast by heading to the show notes or at sarahraven.com/podcast.